And welcome back to the Sports Ticket on a very chilly day, 7 degrees below zero right now here on this Tuesday, January 16th, 2024. Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you as always by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. We're joined now by Kyle Doporalski. He is assistant executive director with the Kansas State High School Activity Association. He's also Kasha's basketball administrator, and we're having him on to tell us when it's going to warm up, first and foremost, and then second is to talk about the shot clock that's going to be coming to high school basketball in the state of Kansas coming up next season. Kyle, how you doing, and are you staying warm?
I am, Wade. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on with you here this morning, and I will say, prior to coming back to Kansas and taking this position, I lived in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and worked in the athletic department at the University of North Dakota for 10 years. And this is definitely a North Dakota morning. There's no question about that.
I remember my first experience up in the Dakotas. I was calling some basketball games for Iowa Western, and we had the bus up there. And I remember we pulled up towards the gym we were going to be practicing in, and I saw snowmobiles that were going along the side of the road. There was hardly any vehicles. It was actually snowmobiles. I don't know if they were going to work or going to the gym or what, but it was a different experience. And I was like, man, I can't stand the cold. And if that's how cold it is up here, I don't want to live here. And you actually experienced it.
For 10 years, yeah. Where were you at? Who are the Reavers playing?
It was some Williston. Williston, is that South Dakota or North Dakota?
Oh. Well, that is far western North Dakota, so okay. That would have been quite the trip from Council Bluffs.
Yes, it was.
And North Dakota is cold in general, but generally speaking, western North Dakota is a little bit warmer than eastern North Dakota where we were. So I'm not sure what it was like in eastern North Dakota on that particular day, but maybe you actually had the better end of the stick in terms of North Dakota weather.
If that's the case, I don't want to know what it was like that day on the other side of the state, because it was bleeping cold, man. Holy shnikes. And what was funny was we had players from, there was a few players on Iowa Western team that year. I forgot what year it was. They were from warm weather states like Florida, and those guys were like fish out of water. It was kind of funny to see their eyes bulging out of their heads because they couldn't believe how cold it was.
Yeah, no question, man. And junior college basketball, and I've lived it as well. You're on the bus, so you know it's not like you're just flying into a place. You get to experience the hours looking out the window on the bus, and I'm sure their eyes were pretty wide driving across I-94 there in North Dakota.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to join us here today on the Sports Ticket. And certainly this doesn't affect anything high school-wise this season. I want to make that clear. But Kasha releasing here recently that there will be a 35-second shot clock that has been approved on a trial basis for next basketball season, the 24-25 season. That was decided there by the Kasha Executive Board at their board meeting on Wednesday, January 10th, last Wednesday, and just set the tone here for everybody. So all Kasha member schools will have the option to utilize a shot clock for all home boys and girls basketball games at the varsity level. The trial will only be during the regular season. If a school chooses to participate in the trial, they must do so for all their boys and girls varsity games they host. There will be no shot clock next season, however, in the postseason. So take me through the process a little bit here, Kyle, if you would, as to how we got here in regards to having a shot clock in the state of Kansas. I think a lot of people want a shot clock as fans. The bigger schools certainly are all in favor of it. We'll go through the vote total here in a little bit. The smaller schools have their reservations about it. And I think the surprise to a lot of people, including me, is not that we are going to have a shot clock, but that it's going to be on a trial basis. Take me through the process, how you came to this decision.
That was a great recap, and you hit all of the high points, the immediate high points for next season. So well done and well prepared there. So the process really goes back several years, and as you probably know, there are several states around the country that have had a shot clock for many years, including the state we were just talking about a few minutes ago, have had it since the 90s in high school basketball. And it really heated up a couple of years ago when the NFHS, which is the National High School Federation, which we report to, and they write the playing rules for several of the sports that we participate in here in Kansas at the high school level. It was voted upon by their groups to have the shot clock be by state adoption. That was in the summer of 22 is when they put it in. So that really ramped up the conversation, not only in Kansas, but around the country of, hey, when are we going to get this? Why don't we have this? Or why you know, a lot of different questions were being asked. So this conversation that kind of culminated, at least in the latest form last week, had been years in the works. So fast forward to that point in time, prior to my arrival in this position, our office had surveyed the schools around the state. Hey, what do you think about this for administrators? And coaches on the whole, and this is a broad brush, but coaches have always wanted it. You know, they've been for it. They've wanted to see this. The administrators a few years ago did not vote in favor of that at any level. And so, therefore, you know, we kind of, that was our association stance for several years. So then in March of 23, so about 10 months ago from right now, down at the KIAAA conference in Mulvane, and for those who are not aware, the KIAAA is the Athletic Directors Association at the high school level in the state of Kansas. They get together once a year, and that is their opportunity to bring different things to the association, whether it be proposals or ideas. And then it starts to go through the process of the executive board and discussion, et cetera. So in Mulvane, in March, the KIAAA put forth a shot clock proposal at the 6A and 5A level only. So then is what that led to further discussion throughout the summer with the executive board. And then in October, our executive director, Bill Faflick, goes on the road to 8 or 9 different places all around the state for what we call regional administrator meetings. And there's usually a dozen or so topics related to our association, most not related to basketball. It could be other sports, or it could be just CAISA rules in general or CAISA policy in general. And that is the formal method for member schools to provide feedback on whatever the hot topic or hot topics, I should say, plural, of the year are. And then each school literally votes and submits feedback that way. And Bill comes back into the office and tabulates them all up, and then depending on what that data suggests, then either conversation continues or stops. So what our executive board and Bill wanted to do, and our staff wanted to do, was, well, we know this is a 5A and 6A proposal only. However, we want to survey all the schools once again just to see, you know, what the temperature is and have that changed. And I will say at the 5A and 6A level, with the administrators, that stance had certainly changed from a few years ago. So the 6A administrators were highly in favor of it. It was almost unanimous. 5A was a little bit more split. And so at that point, it was pretty clear that the proposal that was presented by administrators, by athletic directors in the state of Kansas, the 5A and 6A combined, were supportive of the idea. Mm-hmm. But like we talked about, we wanted to have feedback from other schools and from 4A on down, just to see what they were thinking. And so then got into the executive board meetings. We've had a couple since October, and it was like, well, we've got a group of schools who have formally asked for this and proposed that this happen. And then we've got others, even at the smaller school levels, the 4A on down, there were schools even in that group that wanted it as well, but certainly not the majority of them. So the conversation twist and turned a little bit, and talked through it, what's the best way to do this. And then the group landed on a one-year trial, which you laid out several minutes ago. So that's a pretty good deep dive into the process of how it happened, and just as you said, it is not required, it is optional, and it'll be for next season at the varsity level. So that's where the group landed, on a one-year trial basis.
CAISA Assistant Executive Director, he's also CAISA Basketball Administrator, Kyle Doporalski, is our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Certainly there's a lot to go through there, and you explained it very well, the whole process, and I appreciate that. So here's the questions that I have, but also questions that I have received from other people, whether it be from a fan or a coach and officials. I know lots of officials that have talked to me for a while now about the shortage of officials in our state and across the country and so forth and so on. And so I've got a series of questions here, but I'll go one by one in no particular order. Why not let 5A and 6A go ahead and be the guinea pigs? They're the ones that voted, as you said. 6A was almost unanimous, 5A a little bit more split, but the combination of the vote, according to the CAISA press release last week, There were 69 votes taken for 5A and 6A schools with the administrators at that October meeting. Yes votes were 47, no votes were 22. Doesn't take a math major to figure out that that's basically two-thirds. A majority wants it at the 5A and 6A level. However, the total vote for all classes did not favor implementation. It was overwhelmingly against. 116 were in favor. 279 administrators were not in favor of a shot clock. That's 71% against it. If you take out the 5A and 6A votes, those numbers become for 4A and below. So we're talking 4A, 3A, 2A, and 1A. Only 69 administrators voted for it, 257 against it. So 79% of 4A schools and lower did not want the shot clock. So that's the first question I have is, why not let 5A and 6A have the shot clock? Let them be the guinea pigs because they obviously overwhelmingly want it. And based on the vote I just showed you there from the numbers that Keisha released, the lower classes overwhelmingly, at least the administrators, don't want it.
Yeah, great question. And the answer is pretty simple. It is a trial basis. It's not required. It's totally optional. And we do anticipate the 5 and 6A schools, the majority of them, implementing it for the 24-25 season. And I think the board wanted the option for everybody else that wanted to try it, whether it be a 4A school or a 3A school or whoever, the opportunity to give it a try and not telling them exactly, you know, you will or you won't, and giving them the option to try it. So, it you know, just as you said right off the top of the broadcast or right off the top of the segment here, is it is an optional. It's an optional one-year trial. It's certainly not required or mandated.
One of the things that I've heard, and I think the trial part is the hard thing to get my arms around, because, for instance, you can have out in our area, you can have a Lakeside that is going to have a shot clock on a Tuesday night, and Osborne comes to town. Then Lakeside goes to Mankato and plays Rock Hills on a Friday. Rock Hills doesn't have a shot clock. And then the other part of that, the trial that I've had to explain to some people is, the first question I hear from people is, okay, so it's optional for the schools. What about postseason? And postseason, the shot clock is not going to be implemented. It's just during the regular season. Were there a lot of discussions, or was there input asked of by officials that are refereeing the games now, and also coaches, from a standpoint of the challenges of from one night to the next playing with and without a shot clock? And for those teams that could make deep runs in the postseason, I've already seen Wichita Collegiate's coach say in an article, and I can't disagree with him, that he's actually okay with the shot clock. But he says, if it's a trial run, why am I going to want to have a shot clock all year long, telling my kids, okay, this is an acceptable shot when the shot clock's winding down, and I go into sub-state and state play, and now it's a whole different game, because the shot clock clearly affects strategy.
Yeah, a lot of questions there. I'll try to address one of them early on. And had a lot of conversations with my counterpart in Nebraska, and maybe we have some listeners in South Central Nebraska listening to this. And John Dolliver is his name, and as you're probably aware, either the day before or the day after, our executive board put this one-year trial in. Nebraska's board required it for everybody, and they've been playing with it for Class A last year and then Class B this year, and then it has trickled down in Nebraska to other places. So that was one of the things that we talked about was, in the first year of it in Nebraska, which was last basketball season, the Class A level only, which is Nebraska's equivalent to 6A, if a Class B school played a Class A school, then, and the game was at the Class A school, the shot clock would certainly be in play. And then vice versa, if the Class A school went to the Class B school, that game would simply not be played with the shot clock. And the idea is the board wanted to collect information and to see how it goes for a year, and then have a further discussion down the road about, you know, requiring it or not. And it'll be interesting to see how that data and how that conversation goes.
What about the burden on officials with this trial run? Because I know I've talked with Mr. Faflick, we've had him on the show before, and Jeremy Hall, they've talked with him, and they've even told the media, and and they asked us nicely, and obviously I agree with them on this, is, you know, we don't need to make the officials' jobs any harder. They have a tough job as it is. There's a shortage of officials. As parents and fans, we need to be more respectful of the job that they're doing. They're not perfect. Neither are fans, neither are players. Nobody's perfect. We as media people are not perfect either. So let's not bemoan a call that might be obvious that it was the wrong call, but let's not make it tougher on the officials. doesn't this trial situation make it tougher on officials? Because the officials I've talked to said that, you know, we already have a lot to deal with, and now we even if you add the shot clock across the board, it adds a whole different dynamic, which I think officials would get used to. But then the fact that you can be officiating a game on a Tuesday with it, then Friday you don't. Was there some input from officials about the trial run? Because we've all been saying, Keisha's been saying it, I agree with it, that any way we can make the job easier for the officials, if we can convince kids, not kids, whether they're girls, boys, men, women, whatever, hey, we need you to be out there and officiate because we have a shortage. We want to have these games so these things aren't canceled due to a shortage of officials. I guess the question I have is, doesn't this make it harder on officials because of the going back and forth possibilities of shot clock and no shot clock?
Clearly, the officials are a vital part of the game, and without officials, we can't play the game. And you raised a good point, and yes, we did seek feedback in a number of different avenues from officials. And the survey that we sent to registered basketball officials I think it was about the same time that Bill was on the road with this in October, I think is when we did it. And the responses that we did get, which was far from 100% of registered basketball officials, suggested that a little more mild tone to what you said to that conversation, that it's that every official isn't completely against it. There are some that are, but there are some that actually want it. And one of the positives of it is late in the game, instead of having to go foul somebody in a tight game to get the ball back, now you can play defense, and it does eliminate that potential intentional, non-intentional foul where there's potential injury. And I know that's just one specific instance, but some officials have brought that up as a positive to it. But you're exactly right. I mean, the officials are clearly the third team on the court, and without them, it's just recess, as we like to say in our office. And it certainly is something that will add an element to the game. And it will add something that everybody, officials included, will have to keep an eye on.
Another question for you I just kind of thought of here, but I had a list of some questions for you, and I appreciate you taking the time and answering these because I'm just trying to understand. Like I said, I'm for the shot clock. I'm okay with it. Whether they have a shot clock or not, it doesn't really bother me one way or the other. I don't know how many possessions are really impacted, where a lot of people say the shot clock is to prevent teams from stalling. I've always argued, well, when you sit back in a 1-3-1 and a 2-3 zone, you're allowing the other team to stall. And I think you could argue things back and forth on whether or not you have to have a shot clock, but I do think overall it would improve the game, so I'm all for that. But when we were looking at the trial period, is kind of unprecedented. I don't recall a time where we have done something like this. I've been in the state of Kansas my entire life, and there's been lots of proposals out there that have been thrown about. I guess it's kind of interesting to me that the way, like, we've had Bill Pfaflik on, we've had Gary Musselman on, former executive director, and one of the common things that they have told us, it's kind of this one of the same answers, is when we, whether it's media, fans, parents, coaches, officials, whatever the case may be, if there's something that Keisha has approved that maybe we don't really understand, we ask, you know, I have people on the air like you to explain it, and say, okay, why did you do this? And what Mr. Pfaflik has said, Mr. Musselman has said many times on things that we might not, like 1A being split into two divisions, or 4A there for a while was split into two divisions. Yeah, I didn't think it was good for the state tournaments, and a lot of people agreed with me in regards to we get more mismatches, so forth and so on. But the thing is, Bill Pfaflik and Gary Musselman said, this is what the member schools voted on. This is what the member schools wanted. And even though it's going to make our job harder, at Keisha, to incorporate more state tournament sites, to organize officials, so forth and so on, the members voted for it. The members wanted it, so we are trying to do what the members want. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, why is the shot clock the first type of thing where we've experimented with the trial when the members, as we pointed out, didn't, at least administrators, overwhelmingly didn't want it? That's the part I'm trying to wrap my arms around on the trial part. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does, and it's a good question, and that's the yin and the yang of it. We had one group of schools that actually brought this proposal to our staff and to the executive board, and it was not something that was just made up. I mean, sure. The proposal worked its way through the system. It came from athletic directors at member schools, and so when it passes 70% at KIAAA, then that's the threshold to put it in front of the executive board or the board of directors or what needs to happen depending on what item it is. You can't just ignore it and not pay attention to it. And,
sure.
and as you talked about at KIAAA in Mulvane, it did pass at 70% at that level. So we had one group of schools who clearly want this, and they advocated for it and put forth a proposal and gathered enough support at their level for it. So you have one group of schools who are asking for this and then others who are not. And that was, that's just a hard, when you have 350 schools in your membership and some want it and some don't,
right.
That's a really hard situation to deal with. And as I laid out a few moments ago, the board landed on, hey, let's just give it a shot and see what happens, collect some data, have some conversations, and then decide what to do with it. And that gives the schools who wanted it the flexibility to add it, and it does not require anybody who doesn't want it to have it.
So interesting. So the athletic directors were overwhelming in favor of it from the KIAAA, but the administrators are overwhelmingly against it. Is that really ultimately why we got to the trial? Because it sounds crazy to me that the athletic directors are overwhelmingly in favor of it and the administrators are overwhelmingly against it. That seems odd to me.
The athletic directors are the administrators, and one slight difference, and it is a good nuance. So KIAAA is the athletic directors, and the people who cast the votes at the regional administrator meetings, those could be athletic directors, and a lot of cases are. Sometimes it's principals, sometimes it's superintendents. So not every school is represented in the KIAAA. That is one avenue and one association that athletic directors can be a part of for professional development. And things like we're talking about right now to bring proposals through. So the attendance at KIAAA is not as well attended as the regional administrator meetings are. So generally speaking, the bigger schools are more represented there than the smaller schools at KIAAA. So that, I think, and at KIAAA, it was a 5A and 6A only proposal, and at least from the best I can remember, so I don't even think 1, 2, and 3, and 4 even voted on it at that point. It was just 5A and 6A.
So that leads me to the next question that some small schools do say, and I'm sure you've heard this many times before, whether it's fair or not, and we know life's not fair, and you're in a tough position in regards to answering these questions, and I appreciate you doing it, and that is, if bigger schools want something but the smaller schools don't, is there a point? And I know there's certain situations where yes, we have the vote, like 1A, 6A, and 5A shouldn't have a vote or have a lot of input on whether 1A splits in the two divisions. That should be the 1A's decision, and vice versa. You know, a 2A, 3A school shouldn't be able to dictate to a 5A and 6A what they should do. And I think every school's different, every class is different, the population, the city, the shot clock in general. You know, there's probably more people available to volunteer or get paid or can afford a shot clock at the bigger schools. But I can tell you, out here in North Central Kansas, we barely are lucky sometimes to get a PA announcer or somebody to run a clock. And when they run the clock, they're not really good at it. And it's not their fault. It's just that somebody's got to do it. Now you add in a shot clock, that makes things even more complicated, which hopefully we can work through and we'll learn this. And eventually everybody will have it. And it'll just be the growing pains of the trial process when it comes to all of that. But what about that is thrown out there? I'm sure you've heard is, well, 5A and 6A want it. Why can't we go ahead and do a separate thing? Such as basketball seeding, which is a whole nother topic I know for another day, but 4A, 5A, 6A, they got East, West, and they seed it, and they got a lot of people complaining in the smaller classes. Wait a minute, we got the four best teams in the state are in the same regional, or the sub-state, or whatever the case may be. How do you balance that and please everybody? Because that's, I think, an impossible job. I can't even, Kyle, I'm going to tell you something. I can't please my three kids. So I can't imagine you guys trying to please 300, 400 schools or administrators or athletic directors. It's a very difficult job that you have to do. But how do you balance that when the bigger schools really want something and the smaller schools maybe don't?
It's really hard. And want to go back to the postseason format. And just so everybody is aware, there was an alternative put forth that that I was a part of, a subset of the executive board for 1, 2, and 3A. That wasn't quite what the schools were looking for, but there is some momentum to potentially make some change there. But that's a good example. There was an alternative put out to vote for the 1, 2, and 3As in that same exact regional format, or same exact regional administrators meeting format that those administrators did not favor. So, you know, that's been, we've had our current format in play for a long time, and you know, before I even moved back to Kansas in this role, I had 1A and 2A and 3A coaches talking to me about that, and we had to do something. And you know, we did put a proposal out there and got some feedback, and it wasn't quite what the schools were looking for. So we'll, you know, probably go back to the drawing board this upcoming spring and summer, and then put something out there again in October and see what happens in terms of the postseason format. Related to the shot clock, the thing that makes this unique is it's a playing rule. I mean, a lot of times is what you'll see conversation on, like the postseason format is, it's not a playing rule. It's not an NFHS right. playing rule. It could be CASHA policy. It could be whatever. But that's, you know, it is unique to have a playing rule be this discussed and be so, you know, I'll just say polarizing in the fact that, yeah, on one end you have, as I said earlier, schools who have worked this proposal through the process and others who don't want to see it. So, it certainly is hard, and no question about it. And that, again, is why I think the board wanted to do a one-year trial, is to allow flexibility for those schools who have asked and clearly want this, the ability to do it, and no one is forced to do it. I have no idea, Chester Hubble Byron or somebody like that in Nebraska, like they might not want it, but they're being required to have it now for next year.
Right.
So, and granted, they've had it, and the shot clock's been in play there for a couple years already, a season and a half. So they're a little bit further down the road in this process than we are. But nobody is forcing anybody to have a shot clock in Kansas.
Could you envision this scenario that 5A and 6A, after we do the trial run next year, that 5A and 6A would adopt this, because they seem to be very about it, obviously. And who knows? Maybe they'll find out there's some flaws with it. Maybe they won't. But can you see the scenario where 5A and 6A after a trial run is saying, you know what, we can handle this. We're okay. Financially, it's not a problem. But you could see the smaller schools saying, listen, maybe 4A is going to say, hey, we're cool. And 3A is like, we're kind of split. And 2A and 1A maybe going, yeah, we kind of like it. But the problem is we're having a hard time getting the people. The cost is another thing for us to worry about as a school. Could you envision that happening after the trial run, that it would be certain classes that would have it required for all of the schools in that class, but still might cross over from a 5A plays a 3A, 3A might not have it, like you mentioned with Nebraska?
Yeah, Wade, nothing would surprise me.
I feel that way too nowadays. Nothing surprises or shocks you, right?
No, not at all. And everything's on the table, and the idea is to see how everything will go next season. So that's the plan, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there any talk about leagues, like doing it by leagues, like leaving it up to the leagues per se, in regards? Because I had somebody ask me that the other day. What about just having the leagues decide as a whole? Or I guess they could do that on their own.
Yeah,
couldn't
they can still do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they could still do that. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, I think the board wanted to keep it as, you know, as I'll say, broad as possible, and giving the schools the autonomy to make those decisions. And if they want to do so as a league, they certainly can.
The biggest impact of a shot clock, in your opinion, will be?
I think just flow of the game at times. And you talked about it a few minutes ago. The flow of the game will be different than what it is in some of the games. Some are not. Some of the conversation has been about average possession time, and I think in the average game, it's really hard to play on averages. I think when you start getting into the situations where there's a delay going on or a stall going on, those are the situations that it'll obviously play the most impact on.
And do you want to explain one thing we failed to mention? This is my fault, but I'll give you the opportunity. Explain how you're going to collect data going forward when you do this trial run next year?
After each game with the shot clock next season, administrators will be required to send in a short survey with a few questions on it, and that survey hasn't been fully developed yet, but it'll have questions such as how many shot clock violations were there? How many times did the game have to stop where officials had to confer with table personnel with a shot clock related issue, et cetera. So we'll have those surveys after each game.
Before I let you go, changing gears just slightly, Kyle, and we're talking to Kyle Dobrowski. I appreciate his time from Keisha. He is assistant executive director and basketball administrator for Keisha as well. What's the biggest challenge that you as an organization face, or just high school sports in general face now?
Well, it's a broad question. I probably better suited for Bill, who's been around a little bit longer than I have, and I'm certainly not trying to dodge it. But I think, there's a couple of different ways to answer that. If you just look at it from a Kansas perspective, and most states, I think, deal with this, what we're talking about now is a great example. You've got a certain set of schools all schools are not created equal. Downs Lakeside, as you talked about as an example earlier, is not the same as Shawnee Mission East.
Yep.
So how do you try to navigate those different things? And this exact topic is a great example of that. On the whole, I think, education-based activities is special, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to come back to Kansas to take this job, because my experience playing as a Kansas high school student it was phenomenal and had great memories doing that. And it's different than club, and it's different than AAU, and it's different than college. But there seems to be each year a little bit more of blending in between the two, or people's expectation of blending between the two. And, we've talked about a couple other things throughout the course of the interview here as well. So, I think that there's a lot of challenge, but you know what? That's everybody has things they're dealing with in their personal lives and their professional lives. And we'll continue to do the best job that we can to put on the best show for kids in our state.
I've said this many times on our show, Kyle, is that everybody can easily complain and argue, and they can say they don't like this and they don't like that. And I always say, come up with a solution. If you want to fire the coach, fine. Give me who's going to replace him. Because if you have no idea, for instance, if you have a better idea than Keisha does on this or this or this, it's one thing to rail against anybody or any organization if you don't agree with them. But I always come back with, what's your solution? And if you have a solution or at least an idea to do something differently, doesn't mean it's a better one, but at least it's been well thought out to where you can respect and understand somebody's trying to solve a problem. I would imagine that's one of the frustrating things, and you guys have to have thick skin in the offices dealing with all this. As you mentioned, representing so many different schools, member schools, is that you got to have some thick skin to let some things bounce off of you, don't you?
Yes.
That's good. You're a Nebraska graduate. Are you a Cornhusker fan?
I am. It's been several years since I lived in Lincoln, but had an outstanding time in Lincoln after 2 years in Concordia as a T-bird at Cloud County. Still follow the Cornhuskers and still follow the T-birds and everything in between. And we are just, my family and I and a couple of my daughter's friends were at the K-State Texas women's game on Saturday. So we keep an eye on a lot of different things here.
All right, time for an off-the-wall question, something just completely off the wall. It ties in what we said earlier. If you had to choose, and there's no in-between, 100 degrees or 0 degrees, which one are you taking?
I think I'm in a unique position to answer that question because after college, I took a job at the athletic department at New Mexico State University, which is in south central New Mexico.
That's
in
right.
Las Cruces. At that point, they were in the WAC with Boise State and Hawaii and Fresno State, et cetera. Things have changed a little bit since then. And then, as we also discussed, I've worked at the University of North Dakota. So we've lived near one border and we've lived near the other border. So I actually have experienced both. And that is a really hard one to say. I think if I had to choose with no in between, I don't know what I would choose.
You built that up so well. I was so ready for you. You had built it up so well. You had all the experience. I'm like, finally have somebody on the show that actually can tell me which one is they've experienced both. And now you're telling me you're not sure.
I'd probably do zero because you can go into your house and warm up. But I know the opposite can be said. But zero, at least once you live in North Dakota for 10 years, zero actually isn't that bad. When you get down in the negative 20s and 30s, that's a little different story. So zero itself with no wind is not bad.
So for the weather right now, you don't think this is nearly as bad as a lot of other people are making it out to be because of your experience?
I think everybody's experience is relative, right? So, if you took just the random 10 people from Las Cruces and dropped them into Grand Forks, a lot of them would freak out.
Yes.
I was fortunate where I've had to live right in the middle in Kansas and Nebraska before those two stops. So I couldn't choose the middle, and I had to choose one or the other. So that's what I chose. And I'll say zero, too, because ponds freeze outside. And hockey can be played, and certainly living in North Dakota, working at UND and the athletic department, have taken to hockey to some degree. When you have 100 degrees, it's hard to play hockey, certainly outside, but can play it inside, but certainly can play it outside too.
How do you think your family would vote on that one, 100 or zero?
Oof. I think they'd go zero.
Yeah, so they'd be right there with you. See, yeah. I'm a wimp. I'll take the heat. I'll handle it. I'll drink lots of water. I'll find the shade. But the 0 degrees, my bones tend to creak more as I get older. And I'm just not a big fan of this cold stuff. So I'm going to have to find a warm place in New Mexico, I guess, and move there at some point in time. Kyle, I greatly appreciate you taking the time, because I know one thing I will say is that whenever we've asked to talk to Mark Lintz or Mr. Faflick, or when Mr. Musselman was executive director, and I'm sure there's others we've talked to, you guys have always been easy to work with. And from the standpoint of, we'll come on and we'll talk to you and we'll explain it. And you guys answer the questions that we have. And yes, there may be some tough questions. There may be some that you may shake your head going, well, where's this coming from? And I get it. I really do. And I think you guys have a difficult job, but I appreciate all the work that you put into it, the travels that you have, trying to please as many people as you can, which is never an easy job, no matter what the field is that you work in. And so I just appreciate you taking half hour of your time today to join us and explain to high school fans and parents and coaches and officials who may be listening today to have a better understanding of how we got to this point with the shot clock. And it will be a fascinating trial period next year to see how it all works out. So I greatly appreciate your time again, Kyle.
You got it, Wade. No problem.
Take care. That's Kyle Dobrowski. He is the assistant executive director of Keisha. He's also basketball administrator. Join us today on The Ticket.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.